Hey everyone, welcome to episode 5 of Money, Romance, and Greed. Of course, I am your host, Lady A, and my co-host is...
DJ!
So, oh my God, you know what? It's really... I mean, I swear these stories, they get better and better, right? So, I mean, we have another really... I think this is really like the core of Money, Romance, and Greed. I mean... You've got your romance, you've got your drama, so it's just, like, very weird.
Hey, let's get into it. Tell them who it is, though.
So, let's get into it. So, this week, we are talking about Kenneth Berno and Vernell Jones.
Now, who is it?
This is really a very interesting, for anybody who has not heard of this, story, this, because this would have been a well over 10 years ago. This was back in 2001. So Kenneth Berno was a talented R&B singer, actually from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And he missed an incredible opportunity to make it big in the music industry. They say he could sing very well, right? He went to a performing arts school in Philadelphia. And while he was there, he actually was linked with a group where, like, him and his friends started a group that was trying to make it in the music industry. But unfortunately, as he grew older, things kind of took a change for him, and he actually had to leave his R&B group that was striving to become big because he became a father. And so he made that decision early on to, you know, get a job, marry his girlfriend, take care of his daughter, and really kind of live that life. So he kind of leaves that, the music world alone, and he goes into the world of normalcy. And so for many of us, we know this group to be the major epic R&B group of Boys to Men. And so that is really the interesting thing about it. So Kenny was actually the fifth member of Boys to Men before we knew them to be Boys to Men. They were striving. They hadn't had a deal yet. And so when he left, the other four stayed. So we would know them as like Wanye, Sean, and all of those. So that is his tie kind of to the music industry without it actually being there for him, because he never had that full shot like the other members of Boys to Men. But, you know, all of that.
He had a shot. He just squandered it.
He squandered it by leaving. And, you know, the thing about it is your girlfriend's pregnant. You're about to have a baby. You want to do the right thing.
He did the stand-up thing, but it was a dumbass decision.
Because you never know what could happen, right? I mean, especially in the 90s when groups were really, like, out there. They were trying to be. It's not like, you know, today where if you're making it big on social media or whatever, you can get a deal. You actually really have to work.
Man, he was part of Boys to Men. Multi-million dollar selling Boys to Men. Grammy winning Boys to Men. He made a bad decision with his dumb ass.
I know he's still probably regretting that decision every day, right?
Let's get into it, though. So, tell him the backdrop.
You know, so he's working his job, and he was working at a factory. He was taking care of his family, but things really kind of got stagnant. He was upset at the fact that, you know, hey, by this time, Boys to Men, it's like on TV, they're doing their thing, they're making it big.
I know you is upset, nigga. You done quit your motherfucking group. Here's the thing. He did an honorable thing. He did a noble thing. He was a stand-up guy. He wanted to, you know, because, hey, I know how it is. I mean, hey, if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. Right. The group wasn't making no money at that point.
Yeah.
He had to feed his baby.
Yeah.
I know he was soggy as hell when he seen him on TV talking about some...
And Michael Bimmons discovered Boys to Men.
I'm sure he was there then.
So, I mean, you want to talk about a dream deferred. I mean, this is a dream lost, right? So, yes. He began to get restless. He's living this normal life. His friends that he went to school with, they're all made it big now. You see him everywhere doing big things. And here he is at the factory. But he was there for his daughter. But it
yeah, it that, just, ain't, that ain't right. You know how it is. Niggas blow up. They stop answering phone calls.
They man.
Yeah, yeah. You said you quit the group.
Okay, don't try to come around.
A four-way split is better than five.
Don't try to come around here talking about you want to get back with the group. So that moment in time was lost for him, right? By this time, Boyz II Men ain't even in Philadelphia no more. They're like, what?
Man, now they calling them worldwide Boyz II Men.
They're over here with Mariah Carey and people of that nature. Right. They done made it big. So, you know, he did settle down with his baby's mother, and they were together in a relationship and all of that, but then it got stagnant, right? So he decides that he's going to try to take another shot at the music industry. They eventually break up. He's still taking care of his daughter, but now he's trying to get back into, okay, what way, if I can't sing, what way can I get back into the music industry? So one night,
hold on, Lady A. He quit the group to get a job to take care of his baby with his baby's mother. It don't work out, and now he's trying to get back into the music game. Come on, y'all. Chase your dream. He should have just stuck with Boyz II Men.
Right.
Your baby gonna be okay. 1 year in him is okay. No doubt.
I will tell you this. You know, I think that his baby's mother would have probably understood.
She wouldn't have had no choice.
Because he is... I mean, he was at a performing arts school, and I think that that is really important. Everybody just can't get into a performing arts school where you can sing and you have an actual talent that you're trying to perfect.
Yeah, I know what it is. He really didn't know. He didn't have that confidence. Again, yep. Y'all, you got to have that dire consequence. You got to have that feeling in your chest. You just got to know that it's going to happen.
That's right.
He wasn't sure, so he took a factory job.
That's right.
And they hit.
And then he regretted it because they hit not too long after he left the group.
Well, I tell you what, he said, fuck that shit. I bet you I'll see him again, goddammit.
He said, right.
Let's get after it. Like,
I'm going to get it either
so
way.
So he gets back into the music industry.
So he gets back into the music industry. And so he's at nightclubs. He's kind of feeling like, okay, this is what I'm going to do.
What's he doing? Singing?
I'm going to manage. He wants to manage.
He's a manager now.
Right. He wants to produce. He wants to manage. I feel like in this moment, he probably feels like that may be the easier way to get into it, because if he just brings the talent. But for whatever reason, you know, he had his own talent, so there was no need for him. He could have promoted himself.
That ship has sailed.
Oh, yeah, it's over. Maybe he can't even sing anymore. Who knows? Do you ever just lose your voice? Yes, I guess you can. Lauryn Hill, you know, the whole thing. Okay, shout out to Lauryn Hill on that one. So anyway, so he's at a nightclub, and he runs into this girl group, and they're really, really good. And in particular, he takes an interest in the lead singer, and her name is Vernell Jones. Now, the group that she was in, they were doing like a talent kind of thing. They were out trying to get known and recognized, and again, trying really what Boyz II Men was doing before Boyz II Men was Boyz II Men. And so, but Vernell was the one who was the lead singer. She was the pretty one. She was the dancing one. She was the one that everybody looked like.
She was the Beyonce of the group.
She was the Beyonce of the group. And the best part of this is that she was up there with her sisters. So all of them were talented.
Right.
They could all sing, and they were all very close. But Vernell just kind of had that it factor.
Sort of like a Toni Braxton and her sister thing.
There you go. And the spotlight would always be on Toni. I mean, you guys are cool. But, you know, Tony's the one. So, and when Kenny saw her, he saw nothing any different than what anybody else saw. So he immediately was drawn to her. He made it a point to meet her, and he wanted to manage the group.
So he pretty much stepped to in Holland. What's happening?
Yeah, exactly. And in the 90s, it's like, hey, let me, you know what I'm saying?
In the 90s and today. Oh, exactly. No, everybody wants to meet online and shit.
Everybody wants to meet online. See, then you actually have to meet people in person, yeah. You know, or whatever. So they meet, they hook up. She likes him, he likes her, and they start this business relationship. Now, initially, when the relationship first began, he was supposed to be managing, like, the whole family, like, all the girls. And
so he was managing the group then.
He was managing the group. But he had taken more of a liking to Vernell, so he kind of was steering her away from her sisters and kind of telling her, yeah, I think you are more of the one.
Oh, I bet.
And here we go.
That's what it's all about. Goddamn, reel her in. Exactly. Big dog. I know.
And because they're already physically attracted to each other, they're spending all this time together, eventually their business relationship turns into a sexual one. And they get into a relationship with one another. As a result of that, she kind of veers off and tells her sisters, no, I'm going to go solo. I'm gonna do this, and you know, me and Kenny, we gonna ride off into the music sunset, where I guess they're gonna meet Boyz II Men, and you know, and that's just kind of what they're gonna do. So they're in this relationship, they're in love with each other. It's very a very close relationship because they're trying to get into the music industry. They have a common interest in all of that, and they kind of shut out everybody else.
So was it a sexual relationship or a relationship? You said sexual relationship. Is it a hit it, quit it type thing, or is it a real relationship?
It was a sexual relationship that turned into a real relationship. Like, they were boyfriend and girlfriend, like, together in a relationship. And they, and even friends and family were saying they were together all the time. Like I said, she even kind of distanced herself from her sisters. The group kind of broke up, and she did her own thing with Kenny. They were doing their own thing. So, you know, that is pretty much where, and the thing is that everything was really kind of going good in the beginning, right? Isn't it always like, oh, this is just so great. Like, everything is so wonderful. So in the beginning of their relationship, everything was going good. But then as it kind of developed and they weren't being discovered like they thought, they kind of spent less and less time in the studio, more and more time in the bedroom, and kind of less of what their dream was. And then that's where the situation kind of deferred. They started, there started being allegations of jealousy and control and abuse and all of these different things, where the family members were coming in and saying, hey, maybe you guys need to go ahead and, you know, break up or separate or take some time apart, because the situation is getting a little bit intense. So fast forwarding that, you know, Kenny is, again, Kenny and Vernell, they're kind of working their jobs. Vernell, by the, like, she had two children because she was the oldest of the sisters. So she had already came with two children. But at that time, they were kind of like with her mom and with her family. And she's kind of really engulfed into this relationship with Kenny. And then, of course, Kenny still has his daughter that he's still taking care of. And he's seeing about her. But they're not in this music thing anymore. That was short-lived, right, DJ? I mean,
the shortest career since.
The shortest career that in the history of music industry careers. So one day, this whole thing in their relationship, this is where it gets really kind of weird, where this whole thing in this relationship kind of takes a hit. Kenny is thinking that Vernell is cheating on him. And Vernell, of course, denies this and says, no, 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 this is not true. But some kind of way, Kenny finds out that she was having an affair with at least one person. And this is where this whole jealousy thing comes into play. So according to court records, Vernell was actually having an affair with a firefighter, and they have been kind of off and on. And by this time, you guys, this is like 5 years into their relationship, so they have been together for like quite some time. So they are in this relationship, but Vernell is out like cheating on Kenny, and Kenny is very jealous. And it gets to a point where Kenny is jealous of every man that she has any type of interaction with accusing her of sleeping around.
Yeah, because she's known for doing that. He should have cut her off at that point.
Right, and that is absolutely not healthy. Where every single time, including DJ, he accused her of sleeping with one of his quote-unquote cousins.
Yeah, she probably did.
And there was no proof of that.
She got a record of cheating.
And that's what happens, you guys. This is where the trust issue is gone. Because it's like, oh, well, if you did it this one time, then you must be doing it every single time you walk out the door. Like, that trust level is just automatically erased, right? And that is really what started the deterioration of this relationship because, you know, he just did not trust her flat out.
I wouldn't either.
And he became very jealous. He became very controlling. And again, this is in the words of Vernell, right? I mean, of course, other people will say that's not true at all. But this is what she said. He was abusive. He's hit her. He's attacked her. He's done multiple things to her. And so this is kind of where it kind of goes, you know, downhill. So once Kenny finds out about, you know, or he has this speculation, okay, you're cheating or you're talking to other men or whatever, he says that he wants to kind of end the relationship. But he has an ultimatum for her. Instead of flat out ending the relationship, he says one or two things are going to happen. Either you're going to write down a list of men that are basically conflicting with our relationship, and we're going to murder them and get them out of the picture, or I'm going to leave you. Now, this is, again, Vernell saying this, that he put this out in front of her. He sat her down at the kitchen table, gave her a piece of paper, and they wrote down the initials of five men that they felt was the most, you know, I don't even know the word, right? Like, damaging to their relationship.
Right, but you got to tell the people she didn't say this until after she was locked up a year in.
Right, right. So, exactly. So, but before she was locked up, and this, right, she did say that when she finally confessed everything, but they went ahead and they made this list and they actually executed this plan. So, the first time they actually executed it was on the firefighter that she was allegedly having this affair with. His name was Ronald Humphrey. So she contacts him. Hey, I want to see you. Don't tell anybody that we're going to meet up. And she wants to hang out and all of this. Well, allegedly, Kenny was there as well. He's kind of hiding in the back wings, and he wants her to actually shoot him. So Ron, not knowing, and again, you guys, people who call you up out the clear blue sky saying, don't tell anybody that I'm meeting with you. Don't, you know, this is a secret and all of this old foolishness. Don't fall for the okie doke. So on October 5th, she actually meets up with him and she performs a sex act on him in his car while they are parked at 33 in Susquehanna Streets. And this is like 9 o'clock at night.
So you're saying Kenny was there when she did that? I don't think it said that, did it?
They said that Kenny was not in the vicinity, like right there, but he knew that she was going. They had already talked about this. He knew that that was the first person that she was going to meet. So, and again, Kenny probably is going to say, no, I didn't know, right? But that is what prosecution and the police and Vernell are saying, that he knew this was going to happen. So she goes there, she performs this sex act on the firefighter, and then afterwards, she pulls out a .38 caliber gun and shoots him. Except the bullet hits him in his arm. And he, you know, he takes off. Like, what are you doing? I mean, could you imagine, like, you're just sitting in a car. I mean, of course, you're not suspecting this. And then all of a sudden, you get a gun pulled out on you and you're shot at. I mean, that was weird, right? So he reported it. He was like, this bitch, and he said, this bitch shot me. So they go to her house and they're looking for her, but she's not there. Because he survived. I mean, he was shot in the arm. You know, luckily he did not pass away or he was not, you know, critically harmed. But she still shot the man. It's like, you know, wow. So, you know, that happens. And they're like, okay, this is weird. Like, you know, why would she do this? And he's like, I don't freaking know. So they put this warrant out for her and they're, you know, kind of looking for her. I mean, like, what do you think about that? I just feel like, you know, it's really, like, weird. Like, okay. But, I mean, this is the agreement that her and Kenny made, right? Allegedly. So, nothing comes from that. I mean, they didn't find her or whatever. She wasn't actually arrested, which maybe if she was arrested for something like that, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now, right? So, a couple of months after that, because that incident happened on October 5th, fast forward to December. She now has the second person on her list that she is, you know, kind of going through these top five people. His name is John Davis. And he actually works as a supervisor at David's Bridal Warehouse, you know, the really cool place where you get your wedding gowns and all of that. It's supposed to be a happy place to work, right? People are getting married. This is not supposed to be a murder, you know, situation. So she actually calls him up again. Allegedly, Kenny knows about this. And she calls him up in the same routine. Don't let anybody know. And I mean, this is like, so here's the connection for John Davis. Vernell actually used to work at the David Bridal Warehouse. Mm. She was fired from there. Now, I don't know if he fired her or if someone else fired her, but for whatever reason, Kenny thought that they had some type of sexual relationship, even though prosecution was able to confirm they did not. But
it's how do you confirm that? Come on.
I guess I'm not quite sure, maybe through family, through friends, or whatever the situation was. So, but they're saying that, you know, other people are saying that they did have a brief relationship. Because I would have to think, why else would you call him up out of the clear blue sky and say, hey, I'm coming to see you, and don't tell anybody, and after work, and all of this stuff. So she does the same.
You know why I said.
Exactly. So the same thing happens that happened when she met with, you know, with Ron. So
what, gave some head and then shot him?
Well, I think in this particular, pretty much, I mean, this was the whole ploy, right? So the difference, though, is that she had been calling John while he was still at work. So co-workers were like, you know, okay, this is weird, because he was telling the co-workers, wow, like, I keep getting these calls out of the clear blue sky from Vernell Jones. And they're like, well, why is she calling you? Like, what business? And he's like, I don't know. It seemed like it's a little, like, I felt a little shaky about this. I'm not feeling like 100% comfortable. But he did let people know that it was her that was contacting him. And so, you know, people were saying, I don't really know if you should meet her or whatever. But for whatever reason, okay, he did. And as a matter of fact, he was getting off of work around 9 o'clock that night. And another coworker who was leaving the warehouse with him actually saw Vernell get in the car with John Davis. So we have an eyewitness to this situation. So, next thing you know, John Davis is found the next morning in his Nissan van. And people are like, oh, wow. Like, you know, his coworkers are coming into work and they're like, oh, is he sleeping? Because he was slumped over. And they look a little bit closer and there's blood gushing out of the back of his head. Mm. So they're like, okay, this is really, really, you know, scary to come to work and find a dead body. And you just saw that person the night before. And he told you that he was meeting with, you know, meeting up with this particular person. And now he's dead in the parking lot. So, you know, it was just a very, like I said, a very strange situation. And again, Vernell did work there. She was fired from that place about 4 months before she actually called John Davis to say, hey, I want to come up there and meet with you. And this was under the guise, is what they claim, is that she wanted to get a couple of her friends or family members jobs there, even though she was terminated. A little bit weird, but I mean, I don't know who calls some company after they've been fired and says, hey, I know I've been fired, but I was just wondering if you could get my cousin on.
She had a personal relationship with him.
Right, right. And so maybe that's why he answered the phone and was like, okay, yeah. Because he had to feel comfortable enough to go out there and meet her after work and everything. So, you know, I mean, that was just really a strange thing. So immediately they did not find who had done it. Like, they had no idea that Vernell would have been the person, or of course they know nothing about Kenny, any of this. And it wasn't until they did ballistics testing where they had matched what happened to the firefighter, the bullet that was inside his arm to the bullet that was in the back of John Davis's head, to say, oh my God, they match.
Same damn gun.
Same gun. And, I mean, within a few months, right? I mean, Ron's shooting happened in October. And by December 17th, John Davis is dead. And so, you know, and so that is pretty much how they were kind of able to put two and two together. Well, Ron, he survived. And he said, Vernell, that bitch shot me. And so, boom, we got a name now. So they go over to Vernell's house. Vernell's not there, but of course her two children are there. This is around Christmas time. So they go, hey, is your mom home? No, mom's not home. Mom's out Christmas shopping. They can't find Vernell. Vernell's MIA now. She's just gallivanting around Philadelphia just like she didn't do nothing wrong. And in the meantime, her and Kenny are still involved. And as a matter of fact, after John Davis was dead, it was reported that Kenny, you know, kissed her and said, one down, four more to go. We're gonna stick with this all the way to the end. Weeks after John was murdered and they were able to get the ballistics and tie all of this back to Vernell, the shooting of the firefighter and the shooting of John Davis, they did eventually find Vernell. She was actually at a friend's house in Philadelphia. And so they picked her up, they brought her in, and she was arraigned. That was on a Sunday. She was arraigned on Monday morning on first and third degree murder and possession of a weapon. And at that time, she was being held in the Montgomery County Prison without bail. I mean, do you really want to let a person like this out on bail? I would have to say
no.
Negative, right? So, you know, so now she's in jail. So police say that when she first was picked up and they brought her in, she's like super hardcore, right? She's like, you guys have nothing on me. I'm not talking. Just all of this. And they began to ask her, okay, you know, what happened? Why did you shoot these people? Did your boyfriend have anything to do with this? Was he involved? I'm not talking about Kenny. I have nothing to say. I'm done. Do you see all these tattoos? Because at that point, she had like several tattoos of Kenny and Kay and all these different things on her body, so we can just about attest to the level of loyalty that she had to him just from all these tattoos that she had all on her neck and all on her body. So from there, You know, she says nothing. Eventually, she pleads guilty to the attempted murder of the firefighter, and she receives 5 to 10 years for that. And then she later on gets the, she does a plea deal. She pleads guilty to the murder of John Davis, and she gets 17 to 36 years for that. And they all are to run, you know, concurrently. So, you know, what is that, about 50 years?
Give or take.
Give or take, right? So the whole time that Vernell, and this is where it gets really, really interesting, because we haven't, if you notice, we haven't talked a whole lot about Kenny, right? I mean, this is really Vernell. She's done these crimes. She admits that she's done them, but she's not implicating anybody else in this situation. When she goes to prison, she actually, they start recording these phone calls. Because before that, so, you know, to back it up, before that, when she first got arrested, right, she, the who goes right flying down there? Kenny does. Kenny and his brother, a couple of friends, they're all down there at the police department in Montgomery County. And they're like, where is Vernell? I want to talk to her. You know, the police is like, no, you know, they start getting suspicious of him. Well, why are you running down here? You know, it's any little thing. I would not initially think they would be a lot suspicious, only because they were in a relationship. They were together. So when Vernell got arrested, if I'm arrested, I would expect for my boyfriend or my husband to go down, you know, to the police department and be like, what the hell is going on here? Why do you have her back there? So because that is just, to me, it's just an attestment of them thinking, okay, this guy's dead. And Vernell is very clear about not talking about Kenny. She specifically said, we are not talking about Kenny in her interview. So when you say, well, we're not, you, she never said, well, Kenny was, had nothing to do with this, or this was just all me, or, you know, I had something to prove, or she never said any of that. She just said, I'm not talking. And she didn't. So when they saw Kenny, they were like, well, we're not going to let you in to speak with her, because, you know, she's not, we're already suspicious of you. And then, so we kind of go from there, and she goes to prison. So while she's in prison, they kind of, you know, start monitoring, because they're trying to see if they can get any additional information from Vernell to kind of see who can be, you know, who's implicated in this. What's, who else would have done this? They were suspicious of Kenny, but they really didn't know. So they're recording her phone calls. They're monitoring who's visiting her, all of these things. And they get nothing. Every time, like, her mom, she talks to her mom. Her mom is like, you know, you need to stay. And Vernell would not break. Family members. And even Kenny would talk to her. He would come up and visit her. They said they had a couple of recordings where he was kind of like yelling at her, and you know, they didn't really go into what he was saying, but it's recorded. So, I mean, he was saying something to her, and he was still going to visit her. So all that time, Vernell kept her mouth shut. And but eventually there did come a time where Kenny kind of starts to distance himself from her, and he's not going up to see her as much. She's calling him, and he's like, you know, well, you've got to stop calling me so much. My bill's like $400. You know, I'll get another lawyer for you, all of these things. And he's eventually to the point where he says, well, you know what, just don't call me anymore. We're done.
Yeah, shouldn't have did that.
And he breaks it off with her, and he stops visiting. Well, because they're monitoring who's seeing Vernell and who she's talking to, the police quickly get wind of that. And they change the tables and they start monitoring him. And they see, oh, well, this is why he's not interested in Vernell anymore. It's because he's seeing other women. And they take that right back to Vernell. And they, you know, say, look, here he is with another woman. He's moved on. He does not have your best interest. He don't have your back. He's not going to support you in any kind of way. He's done.
Played her just like everything.
So once that happens, you know, she's angry. And she's like, really? Like, I'm sitting up in here for 50 years and you're out having frolicking fun with other women and living your life when you had potentially something to do with this. She goes ahead and she gives prosecution what they need or what they want, better yet.
I don't know if I want to believe it.
I mean, yeah, you know, and we've seen this before, right? Where women are just protective of their man. And as long as their men are in their corner and they're good and they don't betray them and what they feel is a betrayal, then they're going to protect you all the way.
No, I was saying, like, I don't think I believe her. Like, I don't know if I believe her. I don't. Now all of a sudden you want to talk? Come on, man. They played your ass.
And that's after a year. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, this situation that happened with Vernell and Kenny is, I think she really believed that he was really going to be there. Like, he was going to, you know, see the loyalty. Like, I, you know, did these things. I went to jail. And now we're just bound for life kind of situation. And then when he kind of ditched her and kind of got tired of always, you calling and I got to come see you and all of this, he just wanted to live his life. And the police department really felt like he got to a place where at first he was doing that to show support until he got comfortable enough to say, okay, I'm out of the woods now. And that's when he kind of started to cut off these ties with her and kind of live his own life. Now, of course, that's, his family is saying something completely different. You know, they're like, please. Kenny would never, ever, ever do anything. She was the bad person. She was the one who was the manipulator. She was the liar. She was the one who committed these acts and admitted to it. And now she wants to bring Kenny down just because he broke up with her. And, you know, that's coming from his mother, his brother, like some close friends of his. They believe he's completely innocent. And I will say this, even the detectives say they had nothing concrete on him, which was really a very, very interesting situation because all they had was Vernell saying, okay, now that he's out here living his life, I'm going to go ahead and tell you the real truth, what really happened. And she, you know, showed up at his, to back up, they eventually did go and arrest him. And it was actually like a year to the day almost that John Davis was murdered. Mm. They showed up at his house and they arrested him and charged him with first degree murder. And prosecution said, well, we're charging you with first degree murder because we suspect that you were the one to put that bullet in the back of John Davis's head.
Suspect.
And then with Vernell saying, you know, he was here and he knew and he made me write this list and he and we talked about that and I was trying to prove myself and or he was going to break up with me and all of these different things was going on. Then she talks about the abuse and all of these different dynamics of their relationship. I mean, it's kind of hard for a jury to be like, well, I just don't believe that, you know, didn't happen or whatever. So, unfortunately for Kenny, I mean, he really, and then he didn't testify. He never, ever spoke in his own defense. So all you have is the word of Vernell, and he never says anything, you know, through the direction of his attorney. So, I mean, I don't know. In this particular case, do you think that Vernell should have been like, Kenny should have been like, oh, wait a minute. Now, everything Vernell is telling you is not the truth.
He should have, but if his ass was in on it, they'd have roasted him. They'd have, man, listen, he don't want to get on that stand. He don't want to get on that stand.
And that's why he never, I believe that's the reason why he never said anything. Oftentimes they'll say, I'm pleading the fifth, or I just choose not to, you know. I'm thinking, well, maybe he, because I have to imagine, okay, so Vernell is the shooter, and she got a plea deal where she ended up pleading guilty to third degree and then attempted murder or assault. Why wouldn't Kenny get some type of, you know, deal? Was one presented to him and he just declined it and said, no, I'm going to take this all the way because I'm innocent? Or was he, because, you know, his mother and his father, you know, I mean, he comes from a full circle family. They're a close-knit family. What would have been the reason why, you know, there would have been maybe no type of deal made or offer for him? Because I never, in my research, I didn't see anything where they said, well, we offered him a deal and he declined.
I mean, at the end of the day, shit, he probably took it to trial. It probably was a deal. He probably said, hell no. I mean, at the end of the day, they had nothing on him but Vernell's testimony. It would have did him good to get on that stand, but unfortunately, I mean, it's a 50-50. It's a gamble. All that's a gamble.
And I'll tell you, you know, one of the things is that they had five people on the list. Two of the people they were able to get to. And the police chief said, I think they would have attempted to kill all of these people on their list had we not intervened and stopped them. So this could have been a lot worse than what it already was, because they have this, you know, I guess, you know, romantic rival loyalty whole thing going on, you know. And the other odd twist to this is that the two men that were actually attacked, one being murdered, did actually have altercations with Kenny. It was proven, you know. The firefighter who survived the gunshot said, well, you know, Kenny, he got up on the stand and he said, Kenny showed up at the fire department. Yeah, I'm looking for, you know, and he's ready to fight him, and he's just, you know, all angry and aggressive. And
you know the name of the game. Your chick told me.
And that's my thing. He's ready to fight this guy. He's ready to beat this guy up. And this guy is like, who are you? And he's like, I'm Vernell's boyfriend, and you better stay away from her and all of this. So
if you got to do all that, dog, you don't need to be with him.
Right. And then, again, the same thing with this, with John Davis, who was eventually actually killed. And again, he confronts him. So you take that in front of a jury. I mean, that's a little bit hard, because we know that you did have an altercation with them. We know that you were, there were eyewitnesses to that. So it's kind of hard to say that you didn't have anything to do with their, you know, attempted and ultimate demise. And then with you not speaking, because you can say, well, yeah, I did have an altercation with them, but that doesn't mean I killed them or I was involved in killing them, but it just doesn't look good.
Yeah, it don't look good at all. And if you lying, they will eat your ass alive on those things.
Oh, yeah. And so, again, you know, the Vernell is saying, hey, it was the manipulation. It was all of these bad things. I mean, she basically got up there and painted this horrific picture of Kenny and made him look as if he was like the worst guy on earth. Now, nobody was in their relationship. Nobody was behind closed doors. So we really don't know whether or not this information was true or not. But when she went up on that stand, she got up there and she was like, here's all of the worst things that Kenny ever did to me. That led, the events that led to these horrific tragedies happening.
It all comes down to if you believe her.
Right. And, you know, she says that jealousy is what motivated it. And the prosecution is saying, well, the reason why he's
jealousy
here.
What? Oh, for Kenny's jealousy, huh?
Kenny's jealousy.
Right.
Is what motivated.
It's easy to put it all on somebody else, huh? You to pull the trigger.
Right. And again, that is the thing. you know? And that's what the prosecution was saying. They're saying, we're not saying anything at all on the fact that, you know, Vernell is absolutely responsible for the murders and the attempted murders of these men. I mean, Ron Humphrey, John Davis, they didn't deserve this. They didn't even see it coming. And that's the worst part about this situation. It's almost a good thing that Ron Humphrey did not end up dying, that she did not actually kill him, because this case could have gone a little bit further where more people would have died before they actually found out who was behind the murders. So it's sad that a man lost his life for a senseless, stupid reason, and another man almost lost his life, but it's a good thing that they were able to kind of stop it before it became this whole, like, she's like a Black Widow serial killer type person, you know?
Yeah, at least that nigga got something out the deal, though.
And I'll tell you, the other thing about this is because, you know, with Vernell having this protection of Kenny, it does draw into question, is she a scorn lover? Like, what value, does she really just want to see Kenny locked up to make sure that he is not with anybody else? So she'll say whatever, she'll do whatever to make sure that, well, hell, if I can't have you and I got to spend the next 50 years of my life in prison, well, you might as well too. You left me out here. I thought you were going to be here with me and whatever, whatever. She wasn't rationally thinking. So maybe that was the motive. And again, you know, Vernell is on her truth. So fast forward that into 2004, finally, you know, Kenny has his day. And of course, he went to trial. He has his lawyers. Everybody hears all the evidence. Vernell, like we said, she does get up there and she testifies and she goes through all of these different events that led up to them writing this list or face the ultimate of a breakup. And so she chooses the latter, or well, she chooses the first plan, which is the hit list. And they kind of sit down and they go through that. And so after everything's heard, after everything's done, the jury's out, everybody's convening. And keep in mind, Vernell's already been sentenced. So she testifies and then she goes right back to the women's prison where she's serving her time for her part in the crimes. After the jury comes back, they do find him guilty on first degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. And that would have been, the first degree would have been, of course, for the John Davis, because the prosecution says that he was the one who put the bullet in the back of John Davis's head. And then, of course, with him kind of lingering around and being in the woods and being around and having knowledge of the attempted murder on Ron, the firefighter, that's how he caught the guilty of the conspiracy to commit murder. And so as a result of that, he received 2 life sentences for the shooting death of one of the several men and having this hit list, and the other life sentence, which I thought was a bit harsh.
They believed her.
Yeah. Oh, they absolutely believed her. And the judge, Montgomery County Judge Thomas Delarici, actually ruled that he was to serve these sentences concurrently and also ordered him to pay his own legal fees. So, you know, the court probably appointed the attorney for him. He ain't had no money. And so they was like, no, you're going to have to pay for your own prosecution. And, you know, and that's the end of that. So, of course, his family just, oh my God. John Davis's family is like, I'm just glad he's in jail. I'm glad they're both in jail. But of course, they still lost somebody. They got to go visit him in the cemetery. But of course, Kenny's family can at least go visit him in prison. Not that, I mean, nobody won in this situation. Vernell's basically doing life. Kenny's doing life. And a man is dead for no reason. And so After the jury was, the verdict was read and the jury was escorted out, the families are just kind of all over with emotion. Kenny's attorney, El Shabazz, said that he did not want his client talking to anybody because he had every intention on filing an appeal on his behalf. So he was like, you know, whenever there's a situation where his client is going to file an appeal, it's always better to just not say anything. But he did say that, of course, you know, Mr. Berno is a human being and a very decent human being who has feelings. He can only imagine the pain that the family is going through. And Mr. Berno, which would be Kenny, offered his condolences to the family. But that did no justice for the family because the cousin of Mr. John Davis, the murdered victim, says she just can't believe that he would not own up to his part. And of course, that's coming off the conviction. This is where they found you guilty, so you must have done it, and now you need to own it. But Kenny is refusing to do that. He's saying, I'm not saying anything. And he hasn't spoken about this situation, nor Vernell, since this has happened in the early 2000s.
Damn.
So, you know, I went to go do some investigation type work in terms of, you know, his appeal. There isn't really anything out there yet. But I'll tell you, his mother and his family are very distraught. Of course, right? They would be. And Vernell's mom and everybody, it's like I said, it's just a losing situation all the way around. So if we, you know, if I'm able to find some information on the appeal, we'll definitely bring that back up and, you know, let everybody know if you, because what they're saying is his family is really saying he didn't get a fair trial. He really didn't get a jury of his peers in essence of what they say he should be getting, and that the information that was provided was only off of Vernell. That's not fair. And the police said, they already said that they did not have anything concrete on him. No physical evidence.
They got a real point. He should have took the stand. Him not taking the stand is what cost him, in my opinion, or whatnot. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, if you ain't got nothing to hide, put it all on the line.
And the other part of that is you don't want to wait until they come and arrest you. Like, if you have an opportunity to clear your name early on, try to do that.
There was no reason for him to go down there, but, I mean, in regards to Vernell or whatnot, I feel like if he, that nigga really did it, sorry for the language, if he really did it, being Kenny, then at the end of the day, she should have said immediately, don't wait a year. Don't do that.
Right.
Don't
exactly.
do that. Because at this point, I'm thinking you might be just a woman scorned.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, whether you got lucky or not, at the end of the day, he doing double life, you doing whatever, and you squeeze the trigger, though.
That's right. And that's the biggest thing here. Vernell was the one who did it. It is only speculation that Kenny fired the shot in the back of John Davis's head. But Vernell pled guilty. She admitted to shooting both of those men. And one of them, Ron, lived to tell about it, to say Vernell shot me. So, I mean, you know, that's just the thing. Again, this is just a very tragic. It seemed like from the beginning, this was just a, like, two magnets coming together that just ended in tragedy.
Yeah.
And nobody won in this situation. You've got two grieving mothers that are heartbroken, two kids without their mother, right? Because Vernell had two children. And both of them are essentially doing life.
Vernell was a ride or die chick, goddamn. At the end of the day, woo!
All the way into the end. But those ride or die chicks, if you cross them, it is going to be hell to pay.
Yeah, she was a little off. She was absolutely off. She was a lot off, y'all. Mm-hmm. Check the show notes. Y'all gonna have to check on this shit yourself.
And we'll update you with the show notes. And if we hear anything else, we'll be sure to let you guys know. And so, I mean, that's really it, you know.
Boys the Men still popping.
Boys the Men is awesome.
Boys the Men still popping. And that's what that he used to be in Boys to Men. Now he's doing Double Life.
That's crazy. Now, is he an innocent man or a jealous murderer? That's something to think about. And of course, you know, let us know what you think. All right, hit us up on our Gmail. And until next time, peace. Hey everyone, it's Lady A.
And DJ. Hey, listen, if you want more amazing episodes of Money, Romance, and Greed,
make sure you subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast fix. And we want to hear from you.
For inquiries, show ideas, or general comments, hit us up at mrg.podcast1@gmail.com. That's mrg.podcast1@gmail.com.